Welcome back to Midday on WNYC. I'm Jonathan Capehart. Rebecca Stone, like many first-time mothers, finds herself feeling overwhelmed and isolated by the demands of caring for a newborn. She's relieved when she meets Priscilla Johnson, her breastfeeding coach at the hospital, and she persuades Priscilla to come home with her as her son's nanny. Rebecca is white, Priscilla is black, and the two form a bond that changes Rebecca's life in many ways. Rahman Alam portrays Rebecca's attempt to transcend race and class issues in his second novel, That Kind of Mother. It's gotten great reviews. It's published by Echo. Rahman Alam, welcome to Midday.
Thank you.
So am I right in saying that that Rebecca persuades Priscilla to come work for her?
That's one interpretation of what happens. But, there's a pretty intense power dynamic involved in between employer and employee. And although she's not her employee at the time that this act of persuasion takes place, Rebecca is pretty stubborn, and she's somebody who's accustomed to getting what she wants. And in that particular exchange, I think you see the beginning of the dynamic that determines what happens in the rest of the book.
Okay, so why did you set the book in 1985? And what does Princess Diana, how does she figure into all of this? Why is she so important to Rebecca?
It's a great cheat to write about the past, especially the recent past, because I understand and the reader understands how the story ends, even though the people within the context of the book do not understand that. So, for example, when Rebecca in the book is holding up Bill Cosby as a role model for her black son, the reader understands that Bill Cosby is not the role model that we all thought he was at one point in time. And that helps the contemporary reader understand how the story that takes place in the 1980s and 1990s is relevant to all parents and, in fact, really all people in this country today.
Oh, okay, so you jumped, you trampled me way ahead. I was trying to peel the onion. But, then let's talk about this. Yep. Okay, so Rebecca persuades Priscilla, who's black, to come work as her nanny.
That's right.
And talk about, once Priscilla goes to work for Rebecca, how does their friendship, can you even call it a friendship?
I'm not sure you can if somebody is leaving a stack of $20 bills for you at the end of the week. I'm not sure you can call them your friend. You call them your employer. But the relationship between a nanny or childcare provider and the family that they care for is a very intimate one. A nanny is inside of the household. They are a first person witness to the intricacies of a marriage, of your parenting philosophy, what's inside of your refrigerator, how much cash you have in your wallet. Your nanny knows everything about you. It's a very intense relationship. And so there is some muddiness around the question of the nature of that closeness.
Well, Rebecca actually, she characterizes her relationship with Priscilla as, quote, an almost actual friendship.
Yeah.
There's in those three words, almost actual friendship, I mean, that's fraught.
Yes. Yes. It's a fraught thing. And, you know, if you are going to have a person in your home or you're going to have a childcare provider at a daycare, you want to love and trust that person because you are entrusting them with your child. And that is a huge responsibility. It's probably the only thing you care about really in your life. So you want to believe that they are your friend, but really they aren't. It's a complex dynamic, and that is sort of what the book pushes on at the beginning.
So Rebecca is a poet.
Yes.
Her husband, Christopher, is a British diplomat.
That's right.
What's their marriage like?
It's not great. they embody, I think, the gender types of that generation. And again, I'm not talking about the ancient past, but I'm talking about the recent past. But
The 80s.
And, you know, I think today, amongst my peers, I'm 40, but amongst people younger than me, I think men and women approach household labor a little more equitably,
right.
You know? And Christopher is older than Rebecca also, so he's of a previous generation, and he is someone who goes off to work at the beginning of the day. He says he kisses his wife, he kisses his child, he grabs his briefcase and heads out the door. And I'm not sure that is necessarily how American fatherhood looks in this moment, at least hopefully it doesn't look that way.
And in the 80s, money is, I mean, that was the universe then.
Yes.
It was the 80s, and it was all about investment bankers and money ruled everything. And he even tells Rebecca that the right amount of money makes anything possible. Mm. This was when Rebecca was trying to convince Priscilla to come.
That's right.
Leave the hospital.
That's right. And work as her nanny.
Right. Even promise to pay her more money, donate money to the hospital.
That's right.
The whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is sort of an American philosophy, that the right amount of money makes anything possible. And it feels very relevant in 2018, as relevant as it did in 1985, probably.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in many ways, I think the cultural context of the moment is very... There are a lot of echoes of the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I maybe just got lucky culturally by setting this book in the 80s at a time when it felt really relevant.
You know, so Rebecca has this incredible sense of the word we haven't used is entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm wondering is, since she is your character, does that sense of entitlement come from her being wealthy? Or does it come from her being white?
Well, I think the way that we understand these issues today is that they are interrelated. And, you know, you can't really talk about privilege or entitlement without addressing class, without addressing education, without talking about, you know, money. You can't, so all, you know, without talking about feminism. So all of these concerns are overlapping. But certainly in the book, Rebecca embodies a particular kind of privilege.
I'm Jonathan Capehart. I'm speaking with Rahman Alam about his new book, That Kind of Mother. So, Rahman, I'm trying to keep the mom's name straight. How does Rebecca's understanding of race change as a result of her not quite friendship with Priscilla now that Priscilla is working for her?
It doesn't address this specifically in the text, but I think that you can assume that this is the most intimate relationship Rebecca, a white woman, has ever had with a black person, right? That this person who is in her home caring for her child, who she sees on a daily basis and sometimes has lunch with or has dinner with, is maybe her first prolonged exposure to difference. And inevitably, that leads to a certain kind of broadening of personal perspective, mm-hmm. right? So I think that there's the beginning of a sort of philosophical change in Rebecca's attitude toward race. And she does talk about race specifically, trying to find a language to talk to Priscilla and bond with her. Rebecca kind of stumbles over a consciousness of her own whiteness.
So there's, she learns about this thing about Woody Allen movies, how mm-hmm, there's mm-hmm. like one.
Right.
Right. One black person. I speak
right.
of one black person.
Yes, that's right.
In Woody Allen
yes.
movies. She didn't know that. She hadn't noticed that.
She
before.
Hadn't seen it before because I think she, just not having been exposed to a black person in her intimate life, she just had learned to look past that.
Mm-hmm. And she's not. Why isn't Rebecca able to estimate Priscilla's age?
Well, that's a really interesting question. One of my desires was to establish Priscilla as somewhat mysterious, that she is kind of forever turning the corner before Rebecca can quite catch up to her. And there are a lot of very basic ways in which white and black are so different. And I think, like, take hair, for example. It's a rich metaphor for difference because black people have very different kind of hair, and white people can sometimes have intense curiosity about that hair and not understand the appropriate ways to explore that or discuss it. And for me, it was important to have every aspect of Priscilla feel slightly amorphous, slightly unknown. And I do think of her as being that kind of person who you would believe is 35 or 55 and just not being able to really figure it out.
Well, I mean, I was fascinated by that because, you know, we have this saying, black don't crack. And you have
you
to
go.
Add,
yeah.
you really, if you're trying to guess the age, really, rule of thumb, add 10.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen Cicely Tyson on the red carpet recently, right?
So, right, she's 90-something
yes,
years
right.
old.
That's right.
But so in the limited time we have left, okay, so since you cat's out of the bag, you Black Son, how does Rebecca end up raising a Black child?
I mean, I don't really believe in spoilers for this particular aspect of the book, but Priscilla dies rather unexpectedly in childbirth, and Rebecca results the adopting baby. So Priscilla dies quite early in the book, and the book shifts from being a story about this complex dance between employer and between nanny and employer, and being more about Rebecca moving through life as a white woman raising a Black child and what that means and how that affects her attitudes about basically everything in her life.
And I think you said earlier she's you said stubborn. You described her as stubborn. I was thinking obstinate. The same thing.
That's more eloquent than I would have said, but yes.
So when it comes to raising this Black child, mm-hmm. how stubborn is she? How obstinate is she to the idea that, yes, you're now raising two boys, but two different boys who require different attention?
I think she embodies a particular kind of liberal, maybe fantasy about the ways in which things are always getting better and certain things don't matter. And, you know, that we are bonded more by what we have in common than what divides us. And she also represents, I think, an older way of talking about difference. And the example I have been using is that I could refer to you. If I were speaking to my son, I could say, you could give that letter to the man in the purple sweater, or I could say, you can give that letter to the Black man. And I think Rebecca exists in a cultural context where somehow there was a sense that describing you as the Black man would be insulting. And I think now we understand that it's not insulting, but honest, and simply a way of acknowledging your totality, the totality of your identity, and that simply calling things what they are and understanding and appreciating difference is not giving in to difference and saying we are mm-hmm. forever divided by those things.
Yeah, give it to the Black guy. Yeah. There's only one Black guy. Just make it easy. Come on. I had a question. It just flew out of my head. But among the things that, you know, she has a problem, like there's skincare issues, yes. there are hair care issues, yes. and she's not really getting it.
Those became very tiny and specific ways of addressing a lack on Rebecca's part. And, you know, it is true. And I have two sons who are Black, and I am not Black myself. And I can assure you that I got a lot of drive-by advice on the streets of New York by Black grandmas saying, are you doing this for his hair? Or do you have shea butter? And I appreciate and acknowledge that because it was so well-intentioned and it was a way of teaching me about this thing that they understood I could not know. Mm-hmm. And I think Rebecca's resistance is coming from a place of, well, we're all the same and everything will be well. And that she couldn't acknowledge that a Black baby's hair might require a specific kind of care was simply a way of her insisting that we're all the same.
I remember when my friends Amy and Joanne adopted their now almost adult son, Benjamin. But remember Amy asking me, okay, now what do I need to do? What about his hair? Right. What about his skin? I said, for the love of God, make sure he's moisturized. Right. Because if you're pushing the stroller and the baby's ashy, some Black woman is going to come up to you and wag her finger at you. You're not white. You were born in Bangladesh.
I was born in this country. My parents are immigrants from Bangladesh.
Bangladesh, and yet your protagonist is Rebecca, a white woman. Where does this voice come from?
A lot of this choice has to do with the conventions of literary fiction and the desire to tell a story that feels a little bit universal. And I wanted to tell a story about race. I wanted to tell a story that involved adoption. I wanted to tell a story about Blackness. And the way that one of the easiest ways, I think, to construct something palatable to the general public is to center it in whiteness. You know, that is kind of how the general reader, I mean, all you have to do is turn on television and look at any sitcom and you understand exactly what I'm talking about. There's a certain avenue to reaching a wide readership. And so in a way, I took the easiest path.
Two quick questions. Yes. We're already over time. I'm sorry. But are you spoofing clueless white privilege?
I wouldn't say that I'm spoofing it, but I do hope to disentangle it a little bit and help people understand their own complicity or their own, the ways in which that people can turn a blind eye to more complex things.
And last question, are we meant to dislike Rebecca?
I hear this question a lot about books and characters and whether or not they are likable. And my answer to that is most people are a complicated blend of likable and unlikable.
I'm Jonathan Capehart, and I've been speaking with Rahman Alam about his new novel, That Kind of Mother. Rahman, thank you for
being
here.
Thank you so much.
Tonight at 7:30, Rahman Alam will be in conversation with Emma Straub at Books Are Magic. That's at 225 Smith Street in Brooklyn.